Can you tell us a little bit of something about what Extinction Rebellion is for those who aren't familiar with it?
We have to just encourage every human to engage in nonviolent direct action. And that is what Extinction Rebellion is.
So taking people from the point where they're, I'm concerned about this to, I'm going to do something about this as soon as possible right now. I have to.
Exactly. And also trying to appeal to an inner voice within people where you say, you know, perhaps there will be in appealing to the inner voice within people who basically, when you hear a statistic like the Arctic is warming at twice the rate that people once thought, or you see the superstorms increasing everywhere, and then in conjunction with that, you see these insane decisions like building more pipelines to carry fracked gas into neighborhoods that have already been ravaged through time and history by policies that were racist, classist, you know, completely benefiting the powerful, that we're not going to, the point of Extinction Rebellion is to appeal to the voice within people that is actually what you could consider the voice of reason, right? Living in a world like that is pretty insane. So as a movement, the whole point is to get rid of the denial, to be like, we do not want to engage in this denial in terms of the fact that we need immediate direct action and that this is a crisis, to quote Greta Thunberg, the house is on fire, and to have people join together to directly communicate in any way how severe the situation is in terms of our ecological situation.
Well, you're obviously very driven yourself. And when did you first become involved with Extinction Rebellion?
I feel very lucky to have friends in Troy, not just the Capital Region, but specifically Troy. Hannah Vanderkolk and Dan Lander both went down to New York City. And basically, Dan had heard about Extinction Rebellion through just reading more and more about climate work. And then in November of 2018, the protests were organized by the Extinction Rebellion in London. And these particular protests shut down all five of the major bridges into London. And at that point, Dan was like, wow, these people are going to the limit. They're demanding zero emissions by 2025, which, again, on the rational brain side of things, you know, I've talked to many people who are like, that's insane. It's not going to happen. We're not going to get down to zero emissions in 6 years. But then there's the paradox of the insanity that if we don't, we are facing sure disaster in every sense of the word. And also that the most vulnerable communities around the world are already being the most impacted by these things. And I'm talking about in the global community, let alone domestically, where you have people right in Troy who, you know, live along these highly polluted waterways and, you know, live in highly polluted neighborhoods where there's lead in the soil of playgrounds where children are playing. But we're talking also about the real way that the superstorms are going to increase and the sea level rise is going to make life real different, real fast.
So many of the forces that feed into climate change have already been feeding into society, causing problems for usually the poor in places where corporations perhaps say, we don't really care about these people. We want to promote our product. We want to put this out. We need to do this. The heck with that.
Yes.
And so this is an extension of what has already been going on for decades.
Maybe
beyond
even centuries.
Yeah, centuries.
You know, maybe even an extension
industrial
of
revolution.
Colonial policies. The idea of looking at indigenous people and just saying that, having this very rapacious view of the land and people. But Hannah and Dan came back to Troy from learning about this movement and then talked to a few friends and explained what they learned at this meeting that was held. And then we went down to an action in January of this year, January 26th of 2019, and we engaged in nonviolent direct action, marching down. It was pretty cognitive dissonance inducing because we marched down Fifth Avenue demanding the Extinction Rebellion demands.
So basically things have gotten too far and we have to act now, is what the organization feels, what you feel. This event, which is happening on Saturday, is going to be drawing a variety of people in from a variety of backgrounds, maybe some not quite as shall we say, motivated as others, but all concerned about the same issues. How do you expect, what do you expect to see come out of this?
I'm extremely excited about the panel discussion because I keep reading over the bios of the other women who I'm speaking with, and it's such a mixture. Like, for example, there's one woman who's working on, trying to do remediation through solar, I don't know, this cool method that she'll talk about, and it's a very specific, very technical scientific thing. We also have a professor of anthropology speaking on how she's seeing the way cultural and behavioral patterns are shifting in the face of climate change up in Finland, and how reindeer herders are changing their position. And I know Abby Kinchy from RPI speaking on her scientific research. I'm an English teacher and adjunct professor of English education, and so I never really thought that I would have years ago, I was always involved in politics with things like, trying to go to protests for Mumia Abu-Jamal to be released from prison and, Occupy Wall Street and bringing awareness to corporate issues and the way that there's just been this corporate oligarchy takeover of our country. But in terms of the climate issues, I've been pleasantly surprised that in different groups, especially a group like Extinction Rebellion, there's more space for people who are not necessarily explicitly, who don't have scientific credentials like a PhD in physics or something like that. I'm an English teacher and a big poetry person and writer, and through Extinction Rebellion and through a few other programs, it's a little neoliberal, but Al Gore's Climate Reality Project. I've gotten the message that people from all walks of life are encouraged to join the climate movement.
Well, this is what's needed, is for everyone to become involved in order to really work against the forces of all the people with so much money, so much power, who are moving in the opposite direction, wanting to continue in the opposite direction. And in some ways, what we hope is that with this panel this weekend on Saturday, at the Sanctuary for Independent Media, that people will find a way to address their own concerns and perhaps connect into activism. What would you hope would come directly out of the panel today on Saturday?
I would hope that people would walk away with a sense of exactly what you just said, that all people are needed in this conversation. And even though from 4 to 6 on Saturday, these five or six women are speaking on particular issues and experiences and related to their life's work or activism, that ultimately everyone is needed in this movement. If you have eyes in your head and you have a sense of intuition, we all know that the current culture that we're inhabiting is not sustainable. And I hope that it's emphasized that the people who have already been marginalized and are already the most vulnerable, in terms of policies, are going to be even more vulnerable, and that our empathy and our compassion is going to be essential in banding together and just using all of our skills to make noise, make change, and demand that at the very least we stay human in the face of a future that we can't quite predict, but we know things are going to drastically change.
Megan, I want to encourage everyone to come down and for the panel. Again, it's this Saturday, 4 to 6 p.m. at the Sanctuary for Independent Media. More information at mediasanctuary.org. Megan, thank you very much for your time and your visit.
Thank you very much, Larry.